As open enrollment for health insurance comes to a close this weekend, Midday gets an update on year two of the Affordable Care Act. An estimated 10 million Americans are now covered under the ACA, but the law is still being tested. House Republicans voted for the 56th time to repeal the ACA, and in 3 weeks, the Supreme Court will hear another challenge to the law. The court's decision could affect millions of Americans who receive federal subsidies to make insurance affordable in 34 states. We take a look at year two of enrollment under the Affordable Care Act with Dr. Peter Bielenson of Evergreen Health Co-op and Jonathan Weiner of Johns Hopkins, one of the go-to experts on Obamacare. That's on Midday next, after the news. And welcome back to Midday, our second hour. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us, everybody. Open enrollment under the Affordable Care Act ends this Sunday, February 15th. So in this hour, we'll be taking a look at the second year of Obamacare. How many have signed up in Maryland and across the country? Is the law making people healthier yet? Can we say something about that? How are doctors affected by the law's requirements? And what might happen in a few weeks when the Supreme Court hears a challenge to the federal subsidies in 34 states in the country, a case called King versus Burwell that we have to talk about, another challenge to this law that's been around since 2010, the Affordable Care Act. The government says about 10 million people will have enrolled by the end of this period, at least 10 million people. I think three quarters of those are through the federal exchange, online exchange. And the rest through the states, the 13 states like Maryland, that has its own health care exchange. So we're going to talk in this hour with Dr. Peter Bielenson, the CEO, the founder of Evergreen Health Cooperative. He'll be joining us in just a few minutes. And Jonathan Weiner, professor of health policy and management at the Bloomberg School of Johns Hopkins, who's the go-to expert on Obamacare. He walked us through this whole thing as the law was percolating through Congress and then was being implemented. We'll be speaking with both of those gentlemen in just a minute. I want to start off by saying hello to Lena Herskovitz, who's with Healthcare Access Maryland, which partners with the Maryland Exchange, the government exchange in our state, to help get people signed up. So, Lena Herskovitz, thanks for joining us here on Midday.
Thanks for having me.
What has this been like the last couple of months, Lena? I'm curious. I haven't been able to visit any of these locations where people are coming in to get advice to help get signed up. But who are you seeing? What is it like? What can you tell us about the people who have signed up for Obamacare in Maryland?
Well, we see all sorts of people in our offices. Someone may seek in-person assistance for a variety of reasons. They may not have access to a computer, or they may not feel comfortable using a computer, or they may have questions about the application. Some of the questions aren't always straightforward. Questions about income for someone who's self-employed may be confusing, or questions about household size for someone who lives in a multi-generational home may not be so straightforward. We also see people who are presented with over 50 plans and just need someone to sit down with them and walk through those plans and explain their options and how to enroll.
You know, that's one thing about Maryland. I've noticed that the national press has picked up on. I see references to how competitive Maryland is, at least in terms of the choices people have in the exchange. There are a lot of choices in Maryland.
Yes, there's at least 53 plans offered on the exchange, and they're at a variety of different metal levels and costs. And so for someone who's not familiar with insurance, it's really helpful to have someone who's certified to sit down and really go through those options and explain what the insurance terms mean and what might be best for someone based on how often they use health insurance and how much they are willing to pay.
Lena, what's the sign-up been like out in rural areas? Can you talk a little bit about that, like, say, the eastern shore of Maryland, the lower shore, or even western Maryland? Are you seeing increased numbers from those parts of the state?
Well, Healthcare Access Maryland is the connector entity for the central region of Maryland. So we have navigators located in Baltimore City, Baltimore County, and Anne Arundel County.
That's right. I'm sorry to ask you that question.
No problem. Okay. But we do have presence in some of the rural areas, like in South Anne Arundel County. And we do find that those folks are pretty used to coming to the county seat for assistance. So we see a lot of folks from South County in our offices in Annapolis and Glen Burnie. And, you know, they're willing to drive a little bit further, we find, than some of the folks in Baltimore City.
And there's about 200,000 folks have signed up since November when the exchange went up, a better exchange than the one we had last year.
Yes, I would say without a doubt, the system is moving much more much better than it did last year. So we have a lot of people who are able to enroll themselves at home. And then our call center, we have our own call center, and the call volume has really increased because people are able to do most of the application by themselves at home, but sometimes they just want to check in with a navigator to make sure that their responses are appropriate. So they may call our hotline and just ask a question or two to a navigator.
What are you expecting this weekend?
Well, already this week in our three offices, we've seen over 600 people, especially in our Pasadena office. We've seen a huge increase in the number of people walking in, and we do have Saturday and Sunday hours, so we're expecting to see a lot of people.
That's Lena Herskovitz from Healthcare Access Maryland, which partners with the Maryland Exchange to get folks signed up for insurance under the Affordable Care Act. Thank you, Lena.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, forgot to, the focus of that organization is a central part of the state. Peter Bielenson is with us from Evergreen Health Co-op, and Jonathan Weiner from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School. Nice to see both of you guys.
Nice to see you too.
Good.
Great to be here.
Peter, how are things going for Evergreen? I'm curious about that. We opened up the new exchange in the state in November, and here we are going into the final couple of days.
You know, we're doing much, much better. At this time last year, we had 200 members, which you can't run an insurance company on, and we're now at 15,000. So we're moving quite rapidly, and we got about 4,000 through the exchange this year, still beaten significantly by CareFirst, as you would expect, because they're so well known.
Right.
But both Kaiser and Evergreen are doing much better than they did last year.
Wow. You know, I was just asking, you heard me ask Lena about rural areas. We don't have to go there, but your offices are... Where are Evergreen's offices?
Well, our main headquarters is here on Falls Road in Hamden, or Remington. But we have four primary care offices, one in Columbia, one in Greenbelt, one at the Rotunda in Baltimore, and one in White Marsh. And we're actually a statewide insurance company, the co-op. So we have a lot of people in Hagerstown and Frederick that have signed up with
us. Do you really?
Salisbury, yeah.
So they would go to one of those satellite locations?
They would go to one of our network physicians. And we're encouraging people who are in the I-95 corridor to use our primary care offices, which have had really good outcomes so far.
So you have doctors in those parts of the state?
Correct.
Yeah. Jonathan Weiner, you heard my comment to Lena about the choices people have on this particular exchange in Maryland. I guess that's a good thing. Maryland seems to do pretty well when it comes to choices.
After all, the marketplace was designed by Republicans who believed in choice, and by God, we have choice. Too much choice, probably, yeah,
He likes to remind people
Yeah,
of
I
that.
Like to remind people that this is the moderate proposal of President George Bush, number one, that the Republicans are not liking very much right now.
That number, 10 million, that sound about right? Is that what
Yeah,
the expectations
it's very hard to count. 10 million. We shouldn't forget there's a lot of other places that people are being helped. Some estimate that we're up to 25 million people now have coverage because of Obamacare. The under 26 through their parents. Medicaid, Peter, we're up to what, about 6-7 million expansion?
Yeah. Yeah, in Maryland alone is hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, so we're focusing on the exchange. A little review for your, you know, as I like to say, I'm a 99 percentile expert, and I'm confused half the time. So I'm sure many of your listeners are a bit confused. So again, you know, most people are just staying put, but everybody now can get health insurance without being redlined. If you're sick, you know, even if you're not getting a subsidy, you can get insurance. There is, if you're below 100, so-called 133% of the federal poverty level, which is about $16,000 for a single person. And
$25,000 for a family
For a family of four, you automatically get Medicaid. And that will happen, by the way, after the deadline, which is approaching on February 15th.
What happens after the deadline?
Well, theoretically, the exchange will close down at the deadline. You know, there's some rumor it may be extended. I wouldn't count on it. It may, you know, otherwise it's planning on closing down on the 15th for the people that are going to get a subsidy. People can get insurance at any time. And what everyone's worried about right now is the so-called individual mandate. That is, the IRS will hit you up with a fee. And this year, it's $285 for a single person, is it?
I'm sorry,
$325 for a single person.
$325.
$975 for a family, or 2%. By the way, many people will not have to pay that, but many will. And that's what people are up against for the February 15th deadline.
Many will not have to pay that?
Well, there's all kinds of exceptions. Again, you're going to need to talk to your accountant on that. The main point is that at a certain deadline, and right now it's February 15th, you will not be able to sign on to the Maryland Exchange and get health care through them with a subsidy.
What's going on in the next stage, in the next phase of the Affordable Care Act? Employers, for instance, can you give us some clarity on that?
What I was starting before is there's Medicaid for the lower income, there's the exchange for the individual, and employers. So starting this year, it was supposed to happen last year, but starting this year, and again, Peter, correct me if I'm wrong. By the way, any employer under 50 need not worry about any...
under 50 employees.
50 employees. Full-time equivalents, it does not apply to them. But this year, I believe it's 100-plus full-time employees will need to cover their employees or their certain tax consequences. And that people aren't focusing on that. The good news is most employers with 100-plus are already offering some sort of coverage.
How has Evergreen Co-op done with employers, Peter? Curious about that.
Actually, 90% of our business is with small employers, and we found we're very competitive compared to the rest of the marketplace, and we're very interested in talking to all small employers. We also have just gotten approved for large groups, so we'll be selling to large groups as well. Can I just make one quick point related to what Lena was talking about, and what Jonathan and you've been talking about, is the complexity of the Affordable Care Act. Unquestionably much better off, most people in the country are. Certainly people with pre-existing conditions are much better off, but it is complicated. And the biggest thing that we've been finding is this lack of health insurance literacy, not health literacy where you need to know about your own health care and wellness, et cetera, but just the basics of health insurance, which in all honesty, before I was running this health insurance company, I didn't really know. So there are four things that you need to look at when you're deciding on a health care plan. And what most people look at are just the premiums, the sticker price, and maybe the deductibles, how much you have to pay before insurance basically kicks in. But that's really the bare minimum. You really need to look at other out-of-pocket costs so you can see how it's going to affect your bottom line, knowing what kind of conditions you have, how often you go to the doctor, looking at co-pays and co-insurance. All those things are really important to take into consideration. We've talked a lot in the past about people who write into you about different issues and different plans that they're on, and it's really clear that most people do not understand that. No fault of their own. But that's why Lena's group, Healthcare Access Maryland, and others like that are very valuable.
Yeah, that is an important point. The web page is so much better than it was before. There's a lot of good stuff on it, but not everyone is comfortable with web pages. And Lena's group, and there are several other not-for-profit groups, and there are also brokers in Maryland, insurance brokers, are being trained, and they're a good resource throughout, and people can get help in a lot of locations. So don't wait, because then you're going to end up paying a tax.
I want to ask you both this. And Peter's familiar with this because, as you just said, sometimes I share with you emails that I receive from readers of The Sun when I mention the Affordable Care Act or when we do a show on it. This is what I get. President Obama lied. He said if you liked your insurance plan, you could keep it. Well, that wasn't true because my insurance plan apparently didn't meet the standards of the ACA. And now I have maternity coverage that I don't need. I have this that I don't need and that I don't need. And my deductible is... much higher than it was before. So this is a travesty. This ought to be repealed. Now, when I get those letters, I wonder, is this a person sort of predisposed to not like the Affordable Care Act because they were opposed to it to begin with? Maybe they're Republican. They voted for John McCain. I don't know. They're opposed to President Obama. It's hard to decipher exactly what it is. Or they were just driven crazy by the fact that they had to go sign up for insurance and weren't anticipating that they had to do that at all. So when I try to get to the bottom of that, the specific complaint about last year, the statement that if you liked your insurance, you could keep it. Let's just address that one more time here.
He shouldn't have said that. It's true that 90% of the people that have insurance could keep it. but there were 10%, like perhaps that writer. And the deal, actuarially, he is going to get a better deal now than he would have before. And 8 people will be helped for every 2 hurt. But it is true, there are a few people with lousy coverage now have to buy better coverage, and they might view that as being hurt.
Okay. And Peter, the person who says, now I have worse coverage than I did before, do you don't necessarily believe that? Or is that somebody who just hasn't spent the time to study the choices? What do you think?
As Jonathan said, 80% of people do better, 20% don't. But those
you believe that?
I think that's true. I mean, I think, you know, I've always been for a single payer that's equitable and across the board, which we're not going to have for many, 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 many years. But for the vast majority of people, it's both better. It's both less expensive and better coverage. Lower copays, oftentimes lower deductibles than they would have otherwise been able to get, and their out-of-pocket cost, which is what really matters. We got to figure out how much you will be out-of-pocket across, you know, how much you're paying for deductibles before you get a coverage, how much for your copays, et cetera, and your premium. You can figure out how you will be doing. Most people do vastly better.
This is what I have found. Some of those letters that come into me, I refer to them to people with the state exchange. The staff there, or I actually sent some to Peter Beal and says, what's going on here? The people are missing something. They're complaining about the policy they have. And most of the time we find that they have missed something.
Yeah.
We'd like to know what your experience has been. In fact, I would love to hear from somebody who now has health insurance that didn't have it before. One of the things I want to ask Peter Bielenson about is, are people healthier? Can we say one way or the other, a year later, a year and a half later, are people any healthier because of the Affordable Care Act? And also with Jonathan Weiner from Hopkins, we're going to explore a little bit the Supreme Court challenge that's coming up, arguments to be heard in the first week of March, another challenge to the Affordable Care Act before the state's highest court. 410-662-8780 is the number for Midday if you want to talk with us and if you have a question about the Affordable Care Act. Also, tell us about your experience with it. Do you have insurance for health now, health coverage, health care that you didn't have a year ago, 2 years ago? And what is that like for you and your family? 410-662-8780. Toll-free long distance, 866-661-9309. And the Midday email address, you can write me another one of those emails if you have a complaint or you have something good to say. Midday@wypr.org. As the Supreme Court prepares to hear another challenge to the Affordable Care Act, the government says an estimated 10 million Americans now have health coverage under the law, including more than 200,000 here in Maryland. So it's year 2 of Obamacare coming to a close in terms of enrollment. So we ask a couple of questions here. Is Obamacare making people healthier yet, can we say? Is the quality of care improving? We're going to talk about that during this hour of the show. Peter Bielenson from Evergreen Health. Former health commissioner of Baltimore City, former health officer of Howard County. What would you say in answer to that question? I guess from your own experience with your own co-op, can we say yet, is Obamacare making people healthier?
I don't think you can quite say that. I think you can say people have better access to care, certainly have better coverage, more coverage, and that doesn't always translate to access to care, but generally would be having better access to care. But I can say from our patients that are coming into our primary care offices, we've talked about this before, we do have good data on a lot of chronic diseases being brought under control. Quick example, we were going to have home glucometers, blood sugar monitors for people to take home who are our high-cost diabetic patients. But we found out that the return on investment wasn't good enough because through our primary care offices, which have patient coordinators, health coaches, as well as docs and nurse practitioners, that they were getting their hemoglobin A1C, the level at which it shows how your blood sugar is doing over a period of time, were coming down so dramatically that it wasn't worth giving out glucometers.
You'd need those home monitors.
So these are patients who were not getting the care they should have been getting prior to that, either having no insurance or having insurance and not as good care, that are getting really good care through our care centers.
So you, the co-op, saved some money on those machines.
Correct.
Yeah.
2 quick comments.
Jonathan.
One is we've never had more people insured. 5 different surveys show that now more than ever in our history in the last 40 years, we have greater insurance coverage. That's point one. Point two is study after study after study has shown a person with an insurance card is significantly healthier than a person without an insurance card. Now, we have not yet, because things are, you know, still in play, have a lot of evaluations that have shown, gee, this is exactly how much healthier people have gotten. But nobody who knows about the topic would believe otherwise.
Jonathan Weiner from the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health and Peter Bielenson here from Evergreen Health Co-op. We'll take a couple of calls here in a minute. I just want to spend a couple of minutes with Jonathan and Peter talking about this latest Supreme Court challenge. This case is called King versus Burwell. King is a gentleman from Virginia who is no big fan of President Obama and Obamacare, to say, well, to put it lightly, there's been articles about who this gentleman is. But anyway, he's the named plaintiff in this case. And this case, there's some concern about this. The Supreme Court agreed to hear it. They're going to have arguments in March. It's over whether people in the 34 states that do not have their own exchanges, as Maryland does, are eligible for the federal subsidy, which makes their health insurance affordable, because of some wording in the Affordable
Care
Act.
So again, basically, most of the reasons that people go onto the exchange is because they get a federal subsidy if their income is below. It's about $80,000, $90,000 for a family of four. So a lot of people are getting subsidy. In fact, 80% of the people that sign up on, for example, the Maryland Exchange and all of the exchanges are getting subsidy. As you point out, originally it was meant to be extremely flexible. Some states would do it on their own, some would be in partnership, and some wouldn't, would be the feds. And in the 2,000 pages of the original legislation, it was assumed there'd be all these types of exchanges. But in one place it said the subsidy shall take place in the state exchange, when everybody well knew they meant the subsidy would be anywhere. So the critics have grabbed onto those four or five words, whatever it was, and says, okay, we'll only have subsidy in the, as you say, 13 state exchanges, although there's several that are in partnership, so it's not clear. But the other 27 or whatever could be in jeopardy. So, you know, more than half of the people covered now, in theory, could lose their subsidy. Most people believe that the Supreme Court will realize this is really not much of a case.
Well, you wonder why they agreed to even take it. When I read that, when I read descriptions of this case, what the argument is basically focus on these four words. I wonder why did the Supreme Court, why do they want to take another shot at the ACA?
I think the argument is political, as has been almost all of Obamacare in the past 4 years.
I guess so. We had the 56th vote
and
for
the lower
repeal.
Courts, the lower courts, again, the Republican court said, let's go for it, and a Democrat court say it didn't. I didn't know that laws were red or blue, but I guess so be it.
So what has happened at the appellate level? This thing was shot down, wasn't it?
It was both. That's why it's gone to the Supreme Court. It was approved.
You mean one circuit?
Fourth Circuit upheld it. And I think the Seventh Circuit or one of those circuits didn't. And that's why this went to the Supreme Court. But the prediction here is 6 votes for upholding the law, 3
six
opposed.
6-3?
Yep.
I'm putting
Mark
this down here. PB, Peter Bielenson says 6-3 in King versus Burwell.
And unlike a couple of years ago where there really was a case and an issue, I don't believe there's one here. But we'll see, won't we?
Let's take some calls from folks. I invited people to call in and tell us about their experiences getting health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. Bill in Burlington. Burlington, where is Burlington, Bill?
No, it's Darlington.
Oh, Darlington in Harford County. How you doing?
Yes, hi. I just wanted to say that Obamacare saved the life of one of my best friends who lives in Tennessee. He has a form of cancer that required a stem cell transplant, which his existing policy did not cover. So he found a policy that did cover it, and they couldn't turn him down because of his pre-existing condition.
Well, I mean, I guess we asked for an example.
It's great to hear that. And the two real important points. Yes, there's some negatives, but the two important points is you can't turn anyone down because they're sick. And a year or two ago, everybody could have been turned down in certain types of policies. And there is no upper limit. And so if someone needs something, God forbid, that's very expensive, like his friend, those are very positive. Luckily, most of us don't encounter those positive benefits until we need them.
Yeah.
But a point to be made, that's why the individual mandate and the employer mandate are so important, because you need to have just about everybody in the pool to make the risk spread, to be able to pay for things like that and have the money to do it.
Right. Shauna in Mount Washington, you're up next. Thanks for calling our show.
Hi, thanks for having me. So I have a comment, but it might end with a question. It's about how our insurance has changed. My husband works for a small business, so it's under 50 people. And the business owner decided to change the plan because the insurance was getting more expensive. So our plan went from a $4,000 deductible to a $7,000 deductible. We're a family of four, and we're basically pretty healthy. But what I think has also happened is that now nothing is covered until we reach our deductible. So our nine-year-old son had to go to the emergency room over Thanksgiving, not covered until we reach our deductible. So we have to pay out of pocket for that. Our son needs some meds, and the prescriptions are not covered. Once we reach our $7,000 deductible, we'll have a copay of $15. But right now, we have to pay $286 a month to cover for the meds.
Shauna? Okay, yeah. I understand. So we heard you. Peter, do you want to comment on that? Do you have any questions for Shauna about it?
Well, a couple things. First of all, the decision was made by the employer. And one of the things that we say, because we don't like high deductible plans for exactly that reason, is the only thing worse than being uninsured is being uninsured and paying a premium. In other words, you have such a high deductible that it takes a long time to get there.
Yeah.
So we have much more comprehensive plans under the Evergreen banner, if you will. So really, this is an issue of the employer. And a lot of employers, as Jonathan was sort of alluding to, may still be providing coverage, but there's a lot more cost sharing on the side of individuals.
Important point. What Shauna's referring to, she's not alone. A lot of employers are doing that. This is not Obamacare. This is not through the exchange in all likelihood. If that employer is under 50 or is it 25, I'm not sure, the shop exchange, you know, if they got it through the marketplace, probably wouldn't be allowed to have quite that high a deductible.
They'd be allowed to have that.
Okay. They would be high.
What could the family do? Can the family go off the employer's plan?
It's a challenge.
You're offered affordable coverage, you can't. And affordable coverage is defined as up to 9.5% of your income. This is part of the complexities of it, and probably not helping Shauna. But
now, I can make a follow-up. I actually searched for individual health care for our family, mm-hmm. and it's going to be more expensive for us to go out on our own than to be part of the group plan at the small company. So that doesn't work out. But finally, I want to just point out that so between our monthly payments of about $500 a month and the $7,000 deductible, you know, we're putting out, no matter what, about $15,000 a year, give or take. If I just banked that, I would be able to cover my medical bills for our family and then some.
Unless God forbid, you had something real serious, like the last caller, in which case you'd be covered. But this is a really good example, and this is still a problem we need to fix.
All right, Shauna, thank you for that example. I hope that improves for you. I mean, how could she or her husband push that with the employer?
You could push it with your employer. I mean, that's
you have to push the employer.
Yeah.
Say, we need a better plan here, right? Mm. David, in Baltimore, welcome to the Midday Show. Hi.
Hi. I'm just calling in to let you know, when I was 40, I was diagnosed with a congenital heart valve defect, and so on my record went the term aortic stenosis, and even though several years later it was corrected and I'm perfectly fine, I have never been able to get insurance. I'm self-employed, and it's impossible to get any kind of individual insurance, and in fact, I was even denied a job once because they found out about this, and so now I have insurance under this, under the Affordable Care Act. I have it. It's not great, but it's certainly an improvement on nothing at all.
Yeah, thank you, David.
I mean, again, David is a case of someone. No, he had the problem before. He doesn't now,
right?
Because it's illegal to deny David and tens of millions of people like him coverage, and so that's a success story. Now, granted, the coverage, again, God forbid you need something real expensive, they got you. They'll cover it. I mean, the deductible, same problem Shauna had, may apply.
Right, but it's also a good point that he said he's self-employed. One of the big benefits of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is that it's allowed people who are self-employed, who are entrepreneurial, or want to go out on their own, who would previously not been able to get health insurance, now they can get health insurance.
Susan in Baltimore. Susan's up next. Go right ahead. Hi.
Hi. My husband and I, we are self-employed, and we have a child. And for years, we were unable to afford health insurance, and it was frightening. So we had no health insurance, but then finally my son and I were able to get it, and my husband could not because he had a pre-existing condition. with the Affordable Care Act, thank God he was able to get health insurance, because he had, right after January, once he was enrolled, he had two major health events. He's fine now, but had he not had health insurance, we would probably be homeless, because he had a hospital stay, he had many, many tests, he had a surgery. It would have been devastating to our family. And not only that, so that has obviously helped us as well. Now we're on the same plan, second year, and the cost of insurance is probably about $800 a month less than it was before we had to drop it because it was too expensive. And that was probably about 15 years ago. And the coverage is pretty comparable. So I don't understand when I hear people complaining about the Affordable Care Act, and Shauna definitely had a point in what she was saying, but it doesn't seem to me it's the people that had pre-existing conditions that couldn't get health insurance that are complaining. It's people that already had health insurance, which is very upsetting, because now my husband is, with all these things about repealing the Affordable Care Act, what happens to him? He'll never be able to get health insurance again.
Well,
Jonathan?
Hopefully, one of the reasons people believe that it won't be repealed, I'm not saying it won't be changed, is because of a lot of people like you that are definitely benefit. And you should also know, I'm glad it worked out so well, the number one reason for bankruptcy in this country is, just like you described, someone having a medical event. We're human, but they didn't have health insurance, so I'm glad it worked out well for you.
You know, for the 56th time, as I said before, the House voted to repeal Obamacare, and you sit there and you scratch your head and say, okay, well, what's the alternative? Yeah. What's your plan? Why do you keep doing this? Do you really want to? Andy Harris is one of them, a congressman from Maryland, the first district congressman who votes with that group all the time. So what is your alternative plan? What is
It can be fixed. No one's saying it can't be improved.
Right.
But what's happening here is I made the analogy before. You know, it's the first model, like telling Henry Ford, build a car once and you're not allowed to touch it for 10 years. So, you know, normally you tweak it, you improve it, and the Republicans aren't letting them do it. It does need improving.
Yes. And I just want one last thing. That three Republicans actually voted with the Democrats this time around, if that means anything. Before, it used to be all Republicans. Everybody would vote straight up and down. Joanne in Ellicott City, thanks for calling. Hi, Joanne.
Good afternoon, Dan. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
I'm calling because I was fortunate as a person with a pre-existing condition back in 2002 to qualify for a medical insurance policy under the HIPAA law. And I'm calling because I've heard two answers to my question, and I know that you'll be able to clear it up for me. I've been grandfathered in with my plan, but I've heard on one show that because I come from, I guess, an older plan, that my pre-existing condition is no longer covered. But then another show said, no, I would still be covered. So I'm just wondering if I still am covered for my pre-existing condition.
It depends on the plan that you have, if it's a qualified health plan or not. You certainly can call us offline.
What is your plan, Joanne? Who's your plan with?
Blue Cross Blue Shield of Maryland. And I believe it's a very good plan, although it does cover items I do not need.
Yeah. I'm happy you can call us afterwards. We'll give
you Evergreen Health Co-op?
Right.
I'm always nervous about giving advice that could have such an impact over the phone.
Yeah.
There are grandmother plans that I don't know how long they will last, but you know, are allowed to continue, that don't meet the criteria. But I don't believe there's any prior exclusion even with the new plans, but I would make certain before you leave plan one to go to plan two.
But, yeah, but
I think you're okay.
If you go to a new plan that's on the exchange now or that's offered after January 1 of 2014, there's absolutely no question that your pre-existing condition is covered.
Yeah, so I believe she's okay.
Can I suggest also she can just contact Healthcare Access Maryland too. Get somebody on the phone there or go visit them at one of their sites this weekend and get some straight information. Don't go by what you hear on the radio. You know, it can be very dangerous.
That's a better idea.
Let's take another call before our next break here. Judy in Baltimore. Judy's up next. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm sitting here listening. I'm a nurse, but I also have a 26-year-old daughter, and we were very successful in signing up for a plan. I enjoyed doing it. I did a lot of the footwork for her online, and it was pretty easy. I will just say to Dr. Bielenson, we were very interested in Evergreen, but we had a lot of questions about what would happen if you get hurt out of town and that you would really be out of network. That was kind of a big fear for me, that it would be very expensive to get hurt somewhere outside of the Baltimore area. But the reason why I called is a couple of things that my daughter's friends are doing. They're 26, they're working in restaurants, they're artists, they're not making a lot of money. And a lot of them have just gone and signed up for Medicaid instead of signing up for one of the Obama healthcare plans. And that's been very disappointing to me, but they just said, well, it was just so easy.
Well, hold on a minute. First of all, anybody who's making less than $16,000 as a single person or $46,000 as a family, that's what's offered to them. It is an Obama plan. These are private insurance plans coordinated through Medicaid. You get to them on the exchange at first, but then they send you. So that is part of...
There's no charge for it.
That's correct. Anyone making
$16,000... Because of their income level.
Because of their income level. Some states, and this is a valid reason. I don't, you know, by the way, the half of the poor people who live in states that happen to have Republican leadership don't have that option, many of them. But some of the thoughtful Republican states, what they're doing, and you're hinting at this, is they're making those 20-somethings pay a little bit. And that, you know, that's a reasonable approach. But right now, yes, that's the option here in Maryland.
And let me just really quickly clarify. Actually, we have not only a network that's statewide, but a national network here at Evergreen. So actually, your daughter would have been covered.
Okay.
So
we hope
you'll consider us in the future.
And look at the crab commercial on TV. It'll tell you that. Great commercial.
All right, Judy, thanks for that call, Nurse Judy. We're going to take a break, and we'll talk some more about this when we get back. 410-662-8780 is our number here if you'd like to join us. We're also going to be joined by Dr. Andy Lazarus, a primary care physician who has some things to say about Obamacare and its effect on primary care doctors. He'll be joining us in just a minute or so. If you have a question, though, give us a ring, 410-662-8780. Also, just tell us about your experience with the Affordable Care Act. Let's take another call on this. Peter Bielenson is joining us today, again from Evergreen Health Co-op. I invite you back because during all of this, before there was an Evergreen Health Co-op, you were helping us to understand the issues related to the Affordable Care Act when it was being developed. Since then, you've become a CEO.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's why we have Peter Bielenson back. And we have Jonathan Weiner with us because he and Brad Herring from Johns Hopkins were with us all along while this was being debated in Congress, when it went to the Supreme Court, and since then, and as it rolled out. So both of you have been very helpful to us in understanding this law.
And we're not done yet.
410-662-8780. Allie in Baltimore will take your call before we meet our next guest. Allie, go right ahead.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to share my experience with Medicaid expansion. So I was one of those people who was plunged into poverty overnight after graduating college and went without any kind of health coverage for maybe a year or so. And when I went down to social services, I was able to sign up for PAC, which is a program that no one's ever heard of. And I always kind of described it as Medicaid Lite. And then when Medicaid expansion went into effect, everyone on PAC got moved over into Medicaid, which was way better. And I had I have degenerative disc disease, so I have two bulging and degenerating discs in my back, and I wasn't able to see anybody about it when I was on PAC. And now that I have Medicaid, I was able to get an MRI, have the diagnosis absolutely confirmed. I can see an orthopedist now and go through physical therapy and try to get the problem fixed. And this was something that I was not able to do. And once my income gets better and I can afford a private health insurance, I know that now nobody can disqualify me for something like that. So I'm a big supporter.
I can see why. Allie, thank you very much for that call and that story. Now I'd like to say hello to Dr. Andy Lazarus, a primary care physician in Columbia in Howard County, who likes to write a lot and has a lot of things to say about the Affordable Care Act. Nice to have you on the show, Dr. Lazarus.
Great being here.
Andy Lazarus' book published in the past year is called Curing Medicare, One Doctor's View of How Our Healthcare System is Failing the Elderly and How to Fix It. Curing Medicare is also the name of Andy Lazarus, Dr. Lazarus's blog. So you mostly like the Affordable Care Act. You think it's been a good thing for the country, but you have concerns.
I do. A lot of doctors do like the Affordable Care Act, and a lot of us supported the idea of having expansion of care. A lot of us like the single-payer system. But what that's
which we don't have.
Which we don't have, which we would have loved to have.
Although we do have Medicare.
Yes. We do have Medicare, which probably is what it would have been based on. The problem is that there's the act impacted what's going on in primary care, and that discussion, which is not a very partisan discussion, has been left out of the media, and people aren't talking about it.
What's going on there? What are you concerned about?
Well, you know, my own practice and a lot of other practices that we have a private practice. In the last year, we've been audited twice, and audits take a tremendous amount of time. We have quality indicators now that we have to be judged on, which really I take care of an older population. So these things have very little to do with the quality of the care we're giving. And in fact, it pushes us to spend a lot of our time with our patients sitting in front of a computer, typing in, making sure we finish templated notes, making sure we get what Medicare is requiring of us, and not eyeballing our patients, talking to them, seeing what their needs are. So it's pushed us in a corner. To do a note for me takes about 15 minutes if the patient weren't in front of me. Well, it's a little longer.
So this is an aspect of the ACA we haven't talked about, because all of our discussions have been about access, about what's in the plan and all that. But this is this
although everything Andy's describing is very, very accurate and happening across the country, and probably 90% of all doctors would agree with him. However, 80 or 90% of it would be here without the ACA. You know, it's just sort of a move both in private and public sector, you know, increased electronic medical records, right, increased quality monitoring. And you know, sometimes these rules are well-intentioned, but when they're put in place, you sort of lose the positive attention.
And I think part of the problem is that there's been very little primary care input into these rules when they're made. And I absolutely agree that this is something that was going on in Medicare before the ACA came around. I think the ACA has made it a little worse for us, because there are a lot of rules from the ACA, such as there are new notes that have been created, there are medical homes, there are accountable care organizations, which are incredibly complicated. We actually had to hire an employee just to get us through the regulations. It was something we've done recently.
One of your concerns is that this could discourage medical students from primary care, which is already an issue anyway.
Well, 20% of people go into primary care. A lot of people are leaving primary care, and a lot of primary care doctors are very frustrated. Some are going concierge. Some are being bought up by hospitals. So I think expanding the healthcare system and not having adequate primary care is going to be a tremendous problem, and that's what we see happening.
Peter, do you want to say something about that?
That's actually been one of the benefits of our primary care offices, where we're having no problem attracting docs, because it's not the fee-for-service hamster wheel type of practice. Mm-hmm. And they're able to spend 30 to 40 minutes with a patient on purpose, because they're salaried. We use evidence-based practices, and we have a lot of the team around, a team of people to help them.
So you being a doctor, you're trying to create a model there that's attractive to doctors.
What also is happening is Andy's probably in the minority now. We were discussing that in the green room. I'm not sure it's green, but
That's what we call it.
Yeah. But in terms of, you know, the majority of doctors are now part of organizations, hospitals or integrated delivery systems, and it's tough being a small group practice.
It is. I think a lot of my patients like the idea of being part of a small practice. Coming in, we have 30-minute visits. We get to know our patients real well. We're stable. When I first was audited, I talked to someone in Medicare, and he basically said that they all think that within 5 years, our kind of practice will be extinct. Which is kind of scary. I mean, the old kind of doctor can still exist. But a lot of this, I think, is coming from rules from Medicare and the ACA. And our biggest disappointment is that they're not doing something else. They're not talking to us. And they could actually make the problem better. And I think that's not what's going on. There are regulations about quality care, value care. And the fact that the Health and Human Services announced that 85% of our pay would be based on these quality measures and our value, the value that we provide, we know what that means, and it's not quality, it's not value. Hmm. And we really like more of an input into making some of these decisions.
Have you got the ear of a member of Congress, one of our senators maybe, starting here in Maryland?
I have written to both senators. I had Congressman Cummings' aide call me, but we talked for a little bit, never called me back.
Well, maybe they'll listen to you now. You know, Medicare is based here in Baltimore.
Exactly.
So hopefully, if you're listening out there at CMS, he's your guy.
We've got to take some more calls on ACA generally, but Dr. Lazarus, if you have something to add to any of these calls, please feel free, okay?
Great, thank you.
Let's go to Amy in Port Deposit in Harford County. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are y'all?
Good, thanks.
Good. I have a question that I'd like to ask the Evergreen folks there, just kind of a follow-up to something that I just heard you say regarding Medicaid. We have a close member of our family who we're trying to assist in getting some care. He has some mental health issues that kind of preclude him from holding down a job that does not qualify for the Affordable Care Exchange program. He is in Texas, and so I don't know if that may be, because what I just heard you say was that you can go through the exchanges and then it will sort of funnel you into an easy place to find care if you fall below the income level. But I actually was just, I'm reasonably, you know, intelligent and savvy, internet savvy person, but I've had a very difficult time navigating those in Texas to try and get care.
So Texas is one of these 24 or 25 states, red states, that has not implemented Medicaid expansion. And so what's happened is they all already had a very poor eligibility level of about 40% of the federal poverty level. So if your uncle, cousin, family member is below like 40% of the federal poverty level, he may well be eligible for Medicaid. If not, he's stuck in this donut hole that so people below the 133% of poverty who are eligible for the subsidy.
That would be $16,000 a single person. So if he's making less than $16,000, should be lower 40, than that.
40%. It's like $7,000. Making less than 7 or
8%.
Yeah. So you should check with Texas on their eligibility requirements. But this highlights a very important point that there's a huge segment, 1 million in Texas alone and almost that many in Florida alone, people who don't make too much to qualify for their Medicaid, the state's Medicaid, but don't qualify for the subsidy on the Affordable Care Act on the exchanges. And so they're left with nothing. And we have millions of Americans because several Republican governors have refused to play ball on the Medicaid expansion.
10 million Americans, something like that.
Let's try to get in a couple more calls here before the end of the hour. Sheila in Keedysville. Go right ahead, Sheila.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good. We're short of time, so please be brief.
Okay. I have a very similar problem to Shauna, except I'm much older than her, and I am married, have a spouse, and we are self-employed. Right now we have Highmark Blue Cross and Blue Shield, which is out of West Virginia, but we live in Maryland. Currently, our deductible is $10,000 for the two of us, and our premium is $1,500 a month, which is, I think, bizarre. So in order to, you know, see if we could get some help, I went ahead with the Maryland Exchange last year during the period, and I actually got someone to help me get through the exchange because it was when the computer problems were happening. And at the end of the conversation, I said, isn't there something that, you know, can help us? Because it's like a part-time job just paying for your health insurance now. So her comment, she put me through to some of those exchanges, but the deductible was higher and the premium was just a little bit higher each month. So really, there wasn't any help for my husband and I.
Hold on, Sheila. Let's see. You want a little advice? We're short of time here.
I can tell you very quickly, just looking at the deductible and the premium that you talked about, Evergreen does cover west of Frederick all the way out to West Virginia and actually has a national network as well. And our premiums are nowhere near that high, I can tell you that.
And some of the others could also be a good deal.
And
so check again.
Too.
I would check again.
Sheila, maybe you ought to, I was going to say, earlier in the show we spoke with Healthcare Access.
I'm not sure it covers her region, but there are people to help.
I think Healthy Howard had a window to Western Maryland,
yes,
right?
Correct.
There's a way to contact them. We've got to get that information up on our Facebook page, but you could also find it through the Maryland Exchange. They can tell you, you can get a facilitator to help you on the phone or go visit them at an office in Hagerstown.
You can definitely do better than what you're doing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for
it's
being
the Maryland Healthcare Connection.gov. Is it? Or is
thank
it
you. Thank you for that, Jonathan Weiner.
Maryland Health Connection, and that is, and it's pretty good this year compared to last year. So try again.
Go back and try again. Yeah. Everybody who contacts me with a complaint like that at the Sun. Most of them come back and say, thank you, I went and got some more information. I took another stab at it, and it was better this time.
The navigation is much better this year.
Peter Bielenson from Evergreen Health Co-op, Jonathan Weiner from Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, thank you very much for being here again.
Thanks.
And Andy Lazarus, Dr. Lazarus, Lazris, his book is Curing Medicare. That's his blog as well. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. That's our midday for today. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Midday Senior Producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producer is Michael Hemowitz. Our interns are Carrie DeSantis, David Richmond, and Marjorie Goodman. Midday's engineer is Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming is available at WYPR.org. Dan Rogic's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.